by Roy Butler and Pete Carlson on their experience as veteran fishermen in Leland. It will be added to the series of tapes in the library called Pioneers on Tape.
Now, you'll have to ask him.
My name is Roy Butler. I was born in Leland, September 5th, 1906. I had two brothers, three sisters. My father's name was William Butler, my mother's was Matilda. And they were both born in Leland Township.
Okay. My name is Pete R. Lester Carlson, born in Leelanau County in Leland on October the 27th, 1910. My father's name was William and my mother's name was Anna. My mother was born in Norway, and my father was born on South Manitou Island. I had two brothers. The youngest brother was Ed, and my older brother was Clarence, or known as Twig. Had four sisters. Mrs. Gertrude Kimmerly of Northport and Mrs. Leon Telgard of Leland, my sister Vi Kimmerly of Traverse City, and my sister Donna Volwinkle of Buffalo, New York.
Roy, will you say a word now about the early days when you were a boy? What was your home like, and what did you do for excitement?
Well, earliest I can remember, we lived in the village of Leland in a 6-room house. And the things we used to do when I was growing up was sleigh riding, skiing. Of course, we always had a lot of snow to shovel. And I went to school in Leland all through from kindergarten through high school. But we made our own excitement in those days. There were no plowed roads, no way to get anywhere unless you walked, or with a horse and buggy, or a horse and sleigh. Well, we had a hand washing machine, the first one I remember. And the kitchen stove was an old wood range that used for heat and all the cooking. And, of course, there was a heating stove in another room in the house.
Pete, will you say a word about your early days and what do you remember?
Well, there isn't too much to tell any more than what Roy has said, only that he was talking about any place we wanted to go, we usually had to walk, or once in a while, why, we'd have a horse and cutter or a horse and buggy. But our entertainment, I can remember from here, is in the wintertime especially, we used to walk across Lake Leelanau over to East Leland, pick up a bunch of younger people and then walk to Sutton's Bay and skate in the afternoon and the evening, and then we'd go to the show, which was run by old Gus Smeary at that time. And we used to get out about 10 o'clock, and then we used to have to walk home. So that was our source of entertainment a lot in the wintertime. But we did do a lot of skiing also. In relating to the early school days, we used to live in town, of course, but my grandmother and grandfather had a farm, which was now the McLeod Farm. And I used to be out there quite a lot because it was a farm. I used to like to stay on the farm. And so I stayed there quite a lot of the time in the winter. And then we used to have to walk to school. And we done that every morning and had to walk back to the farm at night or after school. So that was our way of getting back and forth in school days. And I can remember that they used to have four teachers. One teacher that took care of the kindergarten to the fourth grade, and one took care from the fourth grade to the, including the eighth grade, and two teachers in high school. And we seemed to get along very well. We can't complain on our education. We thought we'd done a pretty good job at that time.
Well, my early days in school, I remember the old schoolhouse with two rooms, two teachers. One took care of the first four grades and the other teacher the up to the eighth. That's all the school there was here, was eighth grade. In 1934, the old school caught fire and burned. And after that, they built a new building, and that was when the high school started, for the last four grades. I was in the first class in Leland High School, and I was in the first graduating class of Leland High School in 1924. And we, in 1974, we had a class reunion. There's five of the six left. Hmm. And now, today, we lost one more. There's four of us left, and we're planning another reunion in 1979. After I got out of high school, I thought maybe I could get an education at college and went to Mount Pleasant for 1 year and decided that that wasn't for me, and I come back and worked all summer in a grocery store, which I did all through high school. And in the fall of 1925, my dad says, "I don't think you're ever going to make it in college." He says, "So, because we need some help fishing, so you can go to work for me and see how you like it." And that was the start of my fishing career. And I was with him for about a year and a half, and my younger brother, George, went to work for my dad. And after 3 years, he says, "I think you fellows can run the fish rig, so I'll turn it over to you, and I'm going to build a gas station over on the corner of Main and River Streets." So from then on, he used to go with us once in a while, and when he thought we weren't doing the right things. And he'd try to teach us some more of the tricks of the trade. But that was about the last year he went on the water with us. And it was ours from then on, and he was in the gasoline business on the corner of the town.
Well, I was practically brought up in the fishing trade. My grandfather was a fisherman, and my father was a fisherman. They started fishing here in 1907. They have one of the first licenses ever issued on the lakes. It's a little charred now, but it's still in pretty good shape. And it's made from the fish and forestry at that time. So it's a treasure that I want to keep. But I started fishing when I was 16 years old in the summer. And started fishing with my father and a fellow by the name of Warry Price, who he's in partnership with at that time. And then one year, I went to Northport and fished one summer with a fellow by the name of Dubs Plant. At that time, there were 9 commercial fishermen in this area. And I stayed fishing until I was 19. And I took 3 years into the Coast Guard. And that wasn't for me either. It was nice being near the water, but I'd rather go fishing. So I came back and went fishing with my father and his brother then, Gordon. And fished with them for a few years. And finally, my father and I went to fishing together. And as things progressed, my brother and I, and then at one time, Roy and I fished together. I don't exactly recall how many years, but
3 years.
About 3 years, I think we were together for about 3 years. And that was during the war, and that would have to be the Korean War.
Mm-hmm. World War II.
World War II, and my brother had to go to service, and then when they came back, his brother went fishing with him, and my brother went fishing with myself, and we kept at it then until, for quite a little while. And then finally, my middle son and I went fishing. And then I more or less retired in 74. So that was about the extent of my fishing, which was 47 years, I think it's. Figures out to more or less, maybe. Fine. A typical fishing day back in those days was you got up at 4 o'clock in the morning. Most of the time, that is in the summertime. In the winter, we didn't fish too much in the winter after the 1st of January. Why, we were just about all done then. The boats were all pulled up on the beach and whatnot. But we would many times leave the harbor at 4:30, 5 o'clock in the morning. Sometimes we'd get back before dark, and sometimes it was after dark. Sometimes we wouldn't get through work until 11, 12 o'clock at night. So it really made a long day. But the difference is those days and this present time, They have much faster boats, of course. They do things so much easier and so much faster. They lift just about as many nets as we used to. They don't have quite the variety of the smaller fish that we used to have, what we used to call junk. They don't have quite that much nowadays, and so it's a little easier, but everything is done so much easier and so much faster. We could have 1,500 or 1,800 pounds of chubs one day years back, and we'd work until 11, 12 o'clock at night. Nowadays, they have 1,500, 1,800 pounds of chubs, and they're done at 2, 3, 4 o'clock in the afternoon. So it's done very much easier.
The boats in the earlier days when I started fishing were much smaller than they have today. Of course, they were all wood. They had practically the same machinery. They had net lifters. But of course, it was all gasoline engines, and today there are diesel-powered and bigger boats. But one of the reasons for the small boats was that if you drew over 3 feet of water, if the boat needed over 3 feet of water, that's about all that could get in the harbor, or the two piers that were sticking out off the beach when I started to fish. As far as the fishing, the methods, they're still the same. But in the old days, we had all cotton twine, and a portion of the nets had to be dried every day you come in. So you spend a half a day on the water and a half a day reeling and fixing nets. And another thing that has changed is refrigeration. We used to cut our ice off of Lake Leelanau every winter, store it in an ice house, cover it with sawdust, and hope it would last through the summer, which it always did. And our market in those days was practically all Chicago. And they were hauled out and shipped on the railroad every day, 6 days a week. Where today, you have refrigeration, automatic ice makers, and all fish that are shipped out are hauled with trucks, and of course the market is still Chicago, and the big market I guess today is New York.
Now for the variety of fish that people would probably like to know about. As of right now, there is only one fisherman that can fish gillnets in this area, and that's for assessment fishing only, and that's for chubs. They're under the jurisdiction, of course, the DNR. They're only allowed so many fish. They have a certain amount of fish they can catch, and that is all. They have to report the area that they are fishing. They are told which area to fish, and that is divided into what they call grits, which is a little square that's squared all over the Lake Michigan. And they're numbered, and so they have the grit that they have to fish in that particular area. When the DNR, or when they want them to move, want them to test a different area, then they have to also do that. They do have they do have restrictions. That all they do get is a chub. Once in a very great while, they might get a trout, but it's very, very seldom. You're not allowed to keep them anyway. And so it's just one type of fishing for that one specific type of net. Now, they do have a different fishing method. They call it selective fishing, which is with a trap net. There are a few, only one here in Leland that has a trap net permit up to date. And that is solely for catching whitefish. If there's any trout in the trap net, why, they can be released unharmed. They also have a selective gear called a purse seine that's been tried in the last 3 years, and that's been proven fairly successful, although it's restricted. It's quite hard to find the whitefish because they are schooled, which we never knew that they did school, really. They school in the summertime when it's practical to fish the purse seine. But they have to have scientific equipment. They have a... They do have a sonar, which is a scanner that after you studied it and after you work with it for quite a while, it does point fish out within an area of probably 50 yards from all the way around the boat, 360 degrees. But that's very expensive. The sonar they got right now, I think the sonar that they got now cost right around $6,000, so that is one piece of equipment that they have to have. And they have to have an extra work boat along with the purse seiner. So there's quite a lot invested in even this type of fishing. So everything isn't collected and nothing going back out again. It's just that much more that has to be bought, although the amount of fish that's caught is probably a great deal more than we caught before, but they still have to pay for a lot of extra equipment, so it all equals out, I imagine.
Well, a little question comes up about who decides in the morning whether or not it's fit to go on the water to lift nets. Well, all I can say is you go down and you look at it, you try to get a weather report, which you don't believe, and talk it over with the crew.
Say, well, it doesn't look too bad. Maybe we should try it. So that's the way the decision is made, and you make the run, and if it's not too bad, well, you try to tough it out and lift your nets and come back home. Now this, well, you, of course, in later years, we all had radios, got the weather report from the Coast Guard in the morning, and you believed all you wanted to of it. If you thought you could still go out and lift, well, you went anyway. Of course, sometimes the weather report was right, and you didn't get your work done, you come home, had to go back and finish the next day. But the weather reporting today is pretty much more accurate than it was, say, 15 years ago. So you have to believe what they're talking about is right.
We should have stated back a while back when we were talking about the early days, about the number of families supported directly or indirectly from commercial fishermen. Back at one time, I think I said there was 9 fishermen.
8.
But I think there was only 8. But directly, there was 26 families, depending on commercial fishermen. That was directly. Indirectly, there was quite a few more, such as those that took the fish to the train and the iced harvest crew and different families like that. But there was 26 families directly involved in fishing, so depending on the commercial fishermen. So it was quite an industry back in those days.
Well, I think one of the worst experiences I've had on the water started on November 10th, 1940, when the trout season opened on the lakes, and we were going to fish on around North Manitou Island. So we left here on the 10th, set our nets just before dark, and laid off the island that night. Next day we lifted our nets, got through about 2 o'clock in the afternoon, and then the wind started to blow. I would imagine about 25 miles when the first blast came through. And we started for home and got over by the northeast corner of North Manitou, and the wind was about south, I would say blowing about 35. But we thought we could make it to the harbor all right. So we kept on coming and got within about 25 minutes of Leland, and it was so bad that we didn't think there was a chance that we'd ever get in the harbor. Raining, half snow. So we turned around and said, well, we'll better lay on North Manitou overnight. Maybe we can get home in the morning. And we got to North Manitou, anchored. And in the meantime, the wind was blowing harder, probably about 50 miles an hour, as we were anchored behind the point on the northeast corner. And the sea was getting so big we had to move. So we went farther west, about halfway across the end of the island, and anchored again. This was about 7 o'clock in the evening. And we stayed at our anchorage there till about 11 o'clock, and the wind shifted into the southwest, and we found out later it was blowing 65 and 70 knots. Mm-hmm. And the sea got so big there that we thought it was time to get away from there and start for the east side of the island, which was a bright moonlight night. You could see the island. So we pulled anchor and started for the east side of the island to the dock where we thought we could hang. And about 5 minutes after we left the island, it started to snow. And we didn't see any more land for 3 hours and a half. And then we were about a quarter of a mile from the dock on the east side of North Manitou. And then it started to snow again. It took us another 20 minutes to find that dock. And the first time we tried to get our line on the spile. We missed it. It was snowing so bad that you couldn't see 50 feet. And it took us 15 minutes more to find the dock. And we got a line on it then. And then we were in good shape. But one of the things that bothered everybody, that the telephone on the south end of the island, 20 acres of timber went down and took the telephone line. There were no radios in those days. And nobody knew where we were. And the next day on the 12th, we thought the wind was going down some. So we decided we'd untie and see if we could get home.